What kind of bird are you?
I'm a sparrow. She's a dove.
No, I said, what kind of bird are you?
Dear Susie, here's my plan.
Dear Sam, my answer is yes.
Dear Susie, one.
Dear Sam, where?
Dear Susie, walk 400 yards due north from your house to the dirt path which has not got any name on it. Turn right and follow to the end. I will meet you in the meadow.
Who's missing? Shukuski, you in there? Jiminy Cricket, he flew the coop.
Hello, welcome to the Extra Credits Plus of Moonrise Kingdom. This is the first episode of our Patreon show where we are searching for meaning in our favorite movies. I'm Trey.
And I'm Kelsey.
If you are a non-patron, then you're listening to the first bit of our episode today for free. To become a patron and get the full episode of Moonrise Kingdom, you can click the link in our description. You'll have access to our full catalog of Patreon exclusive episodes. To our new patrons, though, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining the community. As you probably already know from looking on Patreon, you see a few episodes there from Wes Anderson, Moonrise, and Fantastic Mr. Fox. And in the month of October, we will be releasing 3 episodes, 2 Martin Scorsese movies, and 1 horror film.
So exciting.
Yeah, especially the horror film. I'm really excited to see what that's going to be.
Yeah.
Each month, you will have access to 3 Patreon exclusive episodes, and eventually you'll have access to vote on other episodes or series that we will do in the very near future. But today we are talking about Wes Anderson's Moonrise Kingdom, the first Wes movie I think you and I ever watched together.
I think so.
And yeah. I think probably our favorite Anderson movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fine to drop at the top of the pod, right? It is our favorite. It's also the first one that we saw together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about this on the draft too. And I asked this in the Spotify Q&A for listeners, but I was wondering if the first movie that you've ever seen from Wes's filmography is also one of the movies that is at the top of your list.
Yeah.
If you're ranking his filmography. And I think that is partially true in my case, where because Moonrise was one of the first ones I saw and one of the first times that I was introduced to Wes's really singular vision and style,
mm-hmm.
I was kind of like enchanted by it.
Yeah.
And therefore it's like at the top of my list. But I think after watching all of Wes's filmography, I also think that it is one of his movies that's an example of, he has like this project that we'll talk about more today of trying to capture something existential, but still having it be whimsical and kind of capture the duality of like light and dark in life, but make it realistic, but then surreal in that way, having kids act as adults, adults kind of act as kids, and going off of this narrative of maybe adults don't have everything figured out.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a lot that he's doing throughout all of his movies, but I think Moonrise is one of the most successful, examples of him doing that in a way that really works throughout the whole entire film.
Yeah.
So that's why Moonrise is special to me. And I also think that I feel the most emotions during it, because sometimes in Wes's like surreal stories, you feel like you're in a storybook.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, I feel like while it's still heightened, I'm with real people, or like really universal, relatable character. So
yeah.
we'll talk more about that today and why Moonrise is one of my favorites. But I also just want to talk really quick at the beginning of this conversation that like interesting maybe correlation between people seeing a Wes movie for the first time and maybe that being towards the top of their list.
Yeah. So I was going to bring that back up. I think that's a really good observation for why people are so passionate, or Wes fans are so passionate about their favorite Wes movie, because that probably is one of the first commercially popular, satirical, surrealist, multi-genre films they've ever seen. So Wes's style and vision really stands out in everyone's memory, especially when you look at the American like cinema landscape, because usually bizarre movies like his aren't box office hits. Maybe they'll have some, you know, critical praise and they'll do some Oscar nominations or get some buzz around that time, but they don't make $60-70 million like Moonrise Kingdom did, for example. So he does kind of stand out in that way, where like if I think about my childhood, I wasn't watching David Lynch movies, you know, like I wasn't interested in Tarkovsky. So like when I see Wes Anderson films that speak to this kind of like universal anxiety that people have who are just maybe a little bit neurotic, which is like all of his characters. It is really cool to see him do it in these like storybook like movies that really kind of break all norms of what's happening currently in film. So I think Moonrise Kingdom is the best example for what we're talking about. I think Moonrise is the most Wes has ever Wes, if that makes sense to people who heard us talk about what Wes Anderson's whole vibe is. Like I said, this movie was a box office success. It grossed $70-ish million on a $20-ish million budget. And it was also nominated for Best Screenplay. It was a critic favorite at the time. But I think it was mostly iconic and has been like lasting now for 11 years because it was a movie for lost adults and children alike, which is like a very rare theme. And even though that is not a new idea, that's like that idea of children being adults and story in surreal stories and adults acting like children, that is a very kind of like French New Wave trope. Like Truffaut and Godard are most famous for that respectively, which we'll get into today with the references. But I do think Moonrise, while it is heavily inspired and influenced by some famous films and some lesser seen movies that we'll talk about today, it is an original script, even if like famously inspired by those movies. And I think it's probably Wes at his most emotionally controlled.
Yeah, I think even though it obviously has the absurd elements and kind of like quirky style that the rest of his movies have, I would say that it feels the most kind of genre adjacent to a coming of age movie.
Yeah.
And so it does feel like fully realized in that way. Maybe the most accessible movie in that way. Maybe similar to like, I know a lot of people love Grand Budapest and it does have like similar aspects as well, of this kind of positive ending, which we talked more about, on our draft with Grand Budapest because we like Moonrise better. And I think like the best thing to make that point more clear about how he is emotionally controlled and able to deliver like a full story in Moonrise is probably comparing it to a movie like Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. I think while that movie has like a huge cult following and I consider myself a part of that, like I really love Life Aquatic, I could completely understand why someone would not like it. And I wouldn't understand totally why someone wouldn't like Moonrise Kingdom. And I think when you say something is, you know, the most genre of a movie or the most like comparable to a coming of age that we're maybe more used to in other films, people might think that that is something that I'm saying as a negative aspect. Mm-hmm. And I actually like don't mean it like that at all. I think that it's, you know, Wes's most complete work in that it has emotional stakes, mm-hmm. where a lot of times he's trying to create emotional stakes, like with maybe the Royal Tenenbaums characters and their relationship like to their parents, and where I feel like that is like so surreal and I'm not emotionally attached to the characters. I'm just like watching this absurd family story, which is a comment about family dynamics and everything else. And then also I think Rushmore is a good kind of example with this coming of age adjacent genre, but Rushmore is a little bit more subversive in the idea of a coming of age story.
Maybe his most underrated movie.
I think maybe almost like a great comment on the coming of age movies where it's like actually Rushmore, you know, the like main character played by Jason Schwartzman, like my favorite performance from him, is maybe more realistic to what a coming of age journey is. Like you think you are more than you are in certain circumstances. So like, I really love that kind of message or idea captured in Rushmore. But I think with Moonrise, we'll talk about this as we get into the protein and as we get into our awards today, but it really is like a more like, I don't know, pure story. Like it's a beautiful story.
It's more sentimental too.
Yeah. Like really feeling lost and maybe finding like someone who maybe just sees you. Right. Yeah. And that feels like very much like a universal message. And so I think that I have the most like emotional attachment to the story beats in Moonrise Kingdom. And I also interpret it differently than a lot of people I've heard talk about it, which is interesting. But But I do think that's why it's my favorite.
I think Moonrise and Rushmore are probably two of my favorite Wes movies, though I think Rushmore is probably like fourth or fifth on my ranking. Mm. It changes every time I see that movie. But every time I see that movie, I do find myself, as soon as Max Fisher says to that nurse, he says, "I like your nurse's uniform, guy." And he says, "These are OR scrubs." And he goes, "Oh, are they?" I'm like, "Oh, wait, no, this is my favorite Wes movie." And then by the end, I'm like, "Is it my favorite Wes?" So I think that is a good candidate to go and like stick with Moonrise, of being just really bizarre sometimes with childlike humor. And trying to get children to act like adults is just really a funny concept. But I think what you were saying about genre is interesting, because Wes is so lauded for like being able to play with multi-genre stories and always throw the audience off tonally. But yeah. I look at my ranking and I think, wow, I just like his movies that are easy to categorize. Hmm. Like, I find that Fantastic Mr. Fox and Moonrise Kingdom and Rushmore, those are probably my top three Wes movies. And those are, I think, easier to categorize than other films like Steve Zissou or Darjeeling or Royal Tenenbaums that I think play in multiple genres and tonally they're all very good. I don't think Wes has made a bad movie. Bottle Rocket actually is a pretty like single genre movie too, to me. But anyone that kind of doesn't fully balance the tonal bizarre nature of Wes films, they struggle for me to get completely emotionally connected. And so that's why I'm never on the same page with people who love, love, love Grand Budapest, because I respect that movie and admire it more than I love it, because it's doing so much. And we talked about that in our movie draft, and we don't have to get into that today, but it is like a reason that balance of tone and that kind of like concentrated vibe about Moonrise is why I respect it so much.
Well, okay. Cause I do think that for me now, looking at the like filmography and my ranking, cause I like Grand Budapest a little bit more than you. Mm-hmm. I think I like his movies that feel like very complete, and a little bit like more neat. Where some of his movies that are more towards the bottom of my list for him, even though I love them in their own way, they feel like kind of the director's cut. And
like The French Dispatch?
Yeah. I like French Dispatch more than you. I think French Dispatch is like my Asteroid City for you. Like, I think French Dispatch is like his existential work. And even though there's one piece of it that like is a little like, I don't know. We talk about like kind of like the subtle politics of Wes Anderson on our draft. You can go listen to that. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy French Dispatch. I think how you enjoy Asteroid City, which is so funny. They have like the same turquoise poster for them.
Yeah, they do have
and like almost
posters.
The same font. But anyway, so they have like a similar kind of story going on in them in Wes's like later movies. But I think the movies like Life Aquatic or Unpopular Opinion, okay, everyone, just to warn you so you don't have a severe reaction, Royal Tenenbaums for me towards the bottom of the list, or Darjeeling Limited. I think those more so feel like director's cut, and the idea of like it's encompassing like all these film, all these like scenes that it was like, oh, well, this was also cool, or like, but sometimes drag the pace of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think the pacing of the movie is so important to also the message being like fully captured in a Wes movie because they're so absurd. The only one that falls outside of that for me, and maybe I just give it more room because it's his first film, is Bottle Rocket.
Yeah. Because there is something special about that movie.
That also feels like what I'm talking about with all these other movies, like Life Aquatic, these kind of extra scenes or like maybe lingering on a shot too long, that affects the pacing. But with Bottle Rocket, it's just like, it's just a part of like Dignan's whole arc. Like, I would have watched Dignan like sit on like a curb, like
just
thinking about
some firecracker fireworks,
petty crime. Yeah. So
Bottle Rocket does feel like a 45-minute movie with a bunch of deleted scenes.
Yeah.
So I know what you mean by director's cut. That makes sense. But just to be very clear, I think the reason why Moonrise works is because it works for so many different audiences in universal ways, but in different ways. And I think that's really important. Like what you said earlier is that you've seen different interpretations of Moonrise.
Yes.
You don't. Yeah. That is very rare for a coming of age movie to have different interpretations. Usually it's like a very straightforward message, but Moonrise is so idiosyncratic and like hilariously awkward and a preteen fantasy, older adult crisis about like this redemptive power of young love and mutual trust and the fear of losing your innocence or youth and adults fearing like the end of their lives that are coming very soon. And like just this kind of very chaotic, yeah. beautiful existential nightmare in certain moments yeah. while still being weirdly resonant at the end of the movie. And it's just like very reflective. It feels like somebody who's like truly kind of gone to therapy a lot made this movie. It does, like, it almost screams through the screen that somebody's like went through these emotions a lot. And Wes has talked about like when he thinks about Moonrise as a daydream. And when he was like in fifth or sixth grade, he actually didn't go through any of these experiences, but he remembers daydreaming about potentially going through those experiences and like being able to like find yourself. And he thinks that a lot of people just relate to that concept. Like yeah. most people don't have a Moonrise memory,
yeah.
but they think they do, which is yeah. interesting.
They have like what you were talking about. It's like this like preteen fantasy idea of like going on an adventure and like just finding acceptance, like with a friend or something, mm-hmm. right? Like, and like, if you think about reading stories like Susie does, which I love the kind of like overhead shots of all the books, the library books in her suitcase that she brings.
Yeah.
She's kind of like a dark Matilda, you know?
Yes.
And I love her character for that reason. It's like
Wednesday Addams.
Reading, you know, with your little book light, like the Magic Treehouse, you know, series yeah. and being like, oh my God, what if I could go on this adventure and
great pool.
So I think like that is special that he was able to capture that, but then still have existential themes like through his younger characters, older characters. Like at one point, Sam says, when he's leading Susie through the forest, like how he like knows how to do all these khaki scout, mm-hmm. You know, he has all these skills, and then he like pauses and he's like, well, I used to, you know, like it's so funny. Like he, you're right, is like very reflective and self-aware and yeah. his humor hits in that way. So that is why this movie is also special. It is, you're right, like a coming of age, except it's like, if you think of, you know, movies that are beloved, like The Breakfast Club or something.
Sure.
Like
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Like imagine like Wes did them. And I feel like,
wow.
The reason I'm talking about the Breakfast Club in particular here is because you do have like elements, maybe not all the kind of characters in the Breakfast Club, but you do have elements of like the khaki scout boys relationship mm-hmm. to Susie and Sam, and them kind of like starting to see each other. It's like Wes's version of like the Breakfast Club.
Totally. I was listening, but I was also being a bad podcaster to what you were just saying, because I was stuck on the Magic Treehouse and just thinking like how cool it would be for Wes Anderson to direct a series, like a franchise of Magic Treehouse
movies.
That's like
basically what he's doing with the
Roald Dahl.
The Dahl shorts.
Yeah. But it would be so much cooler if he just gave us like a Hunger Games franchise of five movies or something of the his favorite Magic Treehouse books.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that,
or Greta Gerwig or something.
I think that possibly like
somebody could be doing that.
I think it's Ronald Dahl, right?
Is it not Roald Dahl? Oh.
No. Yeah. His last name's Dahl, but yeah. I think it's Ronald Dahl, but I think like the stories for him were probably Ronald Dahl, and our stories were probably like Magic Treehouse.
We're going to do this on the podcast right now. It is definitely Roald Dahl.
I just Googled it. The
D is silent. It's Roald Dahl.
Wait, stop.
The D is silent. There is no N. It's not Ronald. This isn't.
Yeah. Roll.
It's Roald Dahl.
Oh, thank you. I was like, I literally spelled it out in my mind. I was like, R-O-A. Oh, wait, there is no N. I made that up in my mind. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Roald Dahl. Sorry.
Roald Dahl.
My guy, Roald. But I think that those are movies for him. And I think that they are kind of fitting where I don't remember if there were illustrations for Magic Treehouse, but I picture Sam in them. Like,
I remember the covers being sick.
Like
but I think
a character
you're right.
that looks like Sam in them. But I think like things that are kind of strange in a way mm-hmm. With the Roald Dahl stories, like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right? Or that other one where it's like there's a substitute. I only remember the covers of them. But
you can tell we weren't big doll readers growing yeah. up. Yeah.
But I mean like James and the Giant Peach, yeah. like there are the witches is what I was thinking about, yeah. or like Matilda, right? These kind, there are kind of like strange pieces of not only magic, but kind of like dark pieces to those stories. And I think that's why Wes is drawn to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a strange element.
I don't think I had that besides, I think the Magic Treehouse honestly is the greatest pull you've had on a podcast either of us have had in a long time. Because now I'm just thinking of Magic Treehouse. Because those books, I stayed up to like 4 a.m. reading those. Yeah. And like was so excited to like rent more from the library.
I definitely think our generation, a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah. Okay, back to Moonrise. So I want to just talk about like just quickly the criticisms of this movie, which there aren't many, but I just wanted to mention them, that people, it seems critics and some audience members felt like it was weird to see Wes try to juxtapose kids finding themselves with adults who are losing themselves and didn't really relate to like the romantic tragedy of that idea. Mm-hmm. And I think those serious criticisms always lost me because, I don't know. I think it's more people struggle with this idea of mixing surrealism and realism, which is like what Wes does so well. He like takes you out of grounded situations and puts you in somewhere just bizarre. And it's blurring that line between the surreal and the real is just not something that's an easy experience to go through. And when you're using something that is very complicated, like the idea of comparing childlike to adult-like struggles, I think people choose to see this movie more as like a quirky coming of age children's movie,
okay,
who don't like the film that much, which gotcha. I understand. I just feel like that might be reducing it a bit because I think there is a lot. I think this is a pretty rich text,
yeah,
actually, to like for us to talk about today, which is why we chose it for the Extra Credits Plus as the first episode. Because not only is it our favorite Wes movie, not only is Wes have something coming out, but it I think is the best coming of age movie in a long time, which yeah. I think would be fun to talk about today with some of our favorites.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, again, like for me, some of the most interesting parts, even though maybe like it's not fully developed, and maybe we'll talk more about that today, like with mm-hmm. the adults, I think there are so many different like juxtaposing scenes with the adults and the kind of like humor of them, like both knowing that they are an adult in the world, but feeling like sad and disconnected.
Yeah.
I think that's so interesting. And also like the kids feeling like, well, is this what I also like have to grow up to be like that? I don't know if I want that. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
There is a lot happening within that. And then there's also, you know, kind of comments that I just like previously mentioned about the myth of adults having everything figured out, like you'll grow up and then, you know, you'll find yourself, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, or once you, you know, find a partner and you're both lawyers and like you have yeah. this awesome house on the coast,
you should be happy. Why are you not happy? And like exactly. trying to untangle that.
So I think like all of that is very interesting to put in a coming of age journey where it still incorporates like what is like an existential idea of later on in life versus what I still like coming of age movies that have like a happy ending.
Yeah.
But they feel a little bit too sweet and not true to life.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely get into it in our awards, but the end of this film, I think you could argue, is like simultaneously happy and just tragic at the same
time. Yeah. Yeah.
Because when we're saying like there's relatable childhood adult like struggles here, what we're really saying is that there is a negotiation between the expectations of joining society in like a 9-to-5 or joining an institution that we'll talk about today, which is like the point of all these characters, like representing these more meta institutions on mm-hmm. this island. And then also like negotiating that need or expectation from society with like this artistic creativity or like, you know, freedom or agency that you have to figure out when to find time in the day to paint a picture of your, you know, your dreams, like how Sam does at the yeah. end of the movie. And he has to do that before going to work. And like that is that is how these lawyers feel. It's like the lawyers don't have a creative outlet
yeah.
like the parents in the film. And so that, I think, again, when we talk about the rich text, and we'll get into it today, I think that is like a reduced part of the movie. Just because I think people probably saw this once in 2013 or maybe twice since then and haven't revisited. But I recommend people listening to this, before you continue listening, if you want to pause and just go back and watch it, totally do that. I think it'd be a lot of fun to listen back to this after
yeah,
watching
it. Yeah, well,
we're
going to, because we're going to get into very specific scenes.
And spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah, which are coming right now.
Yeah.
Outside of the story, I want to talk technically for a second. I think the famous set designs are notable of Wes's work, and I think there are better set designs across his filmography than Moonrise, but I do think Wes Anderson is letting his team, that he his normal collaborators, flex like at an all-time high in this movie. Like cinematographer Robert Yeoman and composer Alexander Desplat, they shock you in the first few minutes of this movie with their use of like that jarring sound mix to kind of like quietly hearing the interior of this Susie's home. and then showing her looking in these binoculars and then doing this like zoom in, zoom out of Susie's island home with her staring at the audience through her binoculars, and the music just like goes to 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And it is like jarring. Like
that's
when you're watching it for the first time.
Like features of the opening is the sound mixing from going really loud and like blasting the instrumental song to going quiet when we're with individual characters, like her little brother, you know, waiting bored at like the ping pong table.
Jake Ryan.
Yeah. Which I can't wait to talk about the little brothers too.
They're great. But yeah, I think within the first 2 or 3 minutes, you know, as an audience member, you're like in very safe and very confident creative hands across the board, because you have this very familiar Wes like absurd style, but it's obviously like highly stylized to almost like an FU level, where like Wes does not care that you know that you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
Like you do have that feeling, I'm watching something that's been crafted for me. And so you're taken out of it, but in a very fun ride. And I think this is his first movie where he doubles down on that idea. He doesn't try to give you like characters walking around suburbia to make you feel like you're part of a grounded drama. He doesn't really ever have those elements. He wants you to go on this kind of like fantasy dreamlike story with him. And I think because of his specific like set design tendencies and also like the color grading with the pastels, you really do feel like you're entering into a dream. And then when you're shown this kind of like artifice of Susie's home, where it is, has this dollhouse element to it, and you're going through a dolly throughout the house and then you're panning over to different rooms, it feels like Wes has mastered it at this point in 2012, because I know he tried this in Steve Zissou, I think, when he cut the boat in half.
Right.
Didn't he do that, right?
Yeah, which is one of my favorite aspects. And he does do that. He goes through like the whole boat and everyone's rooms and the documentary space and like Life Aquatic. But I think that he does master it more in Moonrise. You're right. And then even more so, I think, in Grand Budapest. And these are examples where Wes, maybe having previously done like Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was his first stop motion, he, you know, has a very specific vision, like you were saying, but isn't shooting in, on location, you know, sets. He builds his set. So like, I don't know if that's a budget thing, as he gets more popular, but in Moonrise, so that whole set that you're seeing, and in Grand Budapest, they like built that.
He tends to ask his friends who are the actors to take the minimum so that they can put more money into the sets.
Yeah. So Moonrise, that was like all in a department store. There are a lot of really cool YouTube videos that are posted of the rooms in the house, because Wes wants it to be so specific and he wants the shots to be so specific that you can't just film it in a normal house to capture his vision. He built the whole set and like put in, you know, like the red piano and like all those small things, like the game boards that are stacked and like the rugs, like all those things, the stairs, are very specific to his vision. And like, he had to build it for that reason, where like things like the khaki scout, scenes, those were in like on a farm or something. Mm-hmm. But that is also true with Grand Budapest. Like you feel the specificity, also because they built it up.
Yeah. And it's almost hypnotic because it's so carefully constructed, and it almost feels like you're being teleported into his world that he's created for you.
Yeah. He makes a dollhouse. He's like Hereditary, you know? He's like
he's like the mom from Raised Toni Collette.
But also though, like something to mention too, that Wes uses miniatures, and that is able to really capture like when he zooms out of the house, right? With Susie looking on the binoculars, and you have that like red, really storybook looking house on, like on the coast. Mm-hmm. His use of miniatures are really able to capture a very specific storybook feeling that makes it feel so whimsical and like exciting to look at each image.
Yeah. What's interesting is like this kind of like outsider experience that we're having watching his movies, where you're not like emotionally connected to them right away because there's so much artifice, but then just being kind of taken by the specificity of it all and then being slowly
so creative,
immersed into it. It is kind of like a rare...
Hi.
Hello there. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. Thank you for listening so far. And hopefully you are enjoying the episode so far. I feel like maybe if you made it this far.
They got it this far. They're having a good time.
I mean, let's hope. But to access our full conversation, you can go to the description of this episode to join our Patreon community, the Extra Credits Plus.
Yes, and for only $5 a month, you can get access to our full catalog of Patreon exclusive episodes. Hope to see you there.